first, checking in with Maggie. So what did you understand about chapter one?
We did this last time and I failed miserably. Just the, you know, about the distillation of the elements from the time and the Purusha and Prakriti and, yeah, I mean, I start to get a feeling, I guess, for what's underneath, you know, things that we've already learned and why things are working. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I would be able to necessarily explain it, but
What's the most important difference of that creation story from the Western scientific creation story?
The Western believes that consciousness came after matter, and the Vedic is that everything evolved from consciousness.
Root, most important.
And time before matter as well, as opposed to...
Time before space. Versus space, you know, because they're materialists, they think that space created time, but because we're emergent, because we're in the emergentism, we're seeing time creating space. And it's really just two different perspectives, which way you're looking at it. But which is the original, you know, which is the, and you can look either direction, it's not like one is wrong. But the big thing is from the astrological perspective, we are in the emergent world. We're in the world where things emerge from consciousness. And if we change our consciousness, what emerges around us changes. Because otherwise, we'd have to change the environment to change our thought process. And we'd have to do cognitive behavioral therapy and reprogram, and then we could like see things different. But like we just change our thought process and the whole reality shifts. And not just like in our life, but even the people that show up in our life start shifting. So this is emergent. This is an emergentism concept. All right. So let's this pretty poem. Go ahead and read that pretty poem that starts chapter two, Maggie.
Oh shit! I have to get my book.
I'll see, Justin.
I seriously think I don't have my book. I think it might be at the other place that I'm staying.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay. I'll have Justin read it then, but his voice won't be as pretty as yours.
I've got character.
I thought we'd have a nice, sweet voice beginning.
Wait for her.
We'll give her a minute. Hey, Frank, after class, we'll talk about the Yavana Jataka.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I don't have it. Sorry.
No problem. All right, Justin.
Okay.
Poetic.
The cyclical recurrence of sunset and dawn daily serves to measure life's decay. But burdened with his mundane tasks, man does not grasp time's movement. Seeing it, old age and pain and death, he does not experience terror. Drunk on the heady wine of delusion, the world is mad in oblivion.
I love that. So, does anybody here know who Bhartrahari is?
Wasn't he like some kind of grammarian? Worked on the structure of the language. Like a yogic level.
The big thing is if you could say at a yogic level, but that's just how they worked with grammar back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
And grammar is like every culture just automatically has a grammar. So it's grammar is indicative of material consciousness. Material consciousness. Grammar is indicative of the soul mind in physical embodiment. If you look in your dream you don't have grammar. In your dream you can look at something And the person goes, and can smile, and it's a whole conversation that just happened. You know what I mean? It's just like, think of, right? Like, you've all had that experience where something happened, and you know, like, well, they said one word, but what they meant, and you know, it's this whole big thing that they meant, right? Have you all had that experience? All right. So the thing is, and in a dream, you can be in Paris in 1 second, in Utah in another, back to Wisconsin with your dad, and then all of a sudden in Utah at walking a dog, like all within, you know, 20 seconds. So time and space have this different, they're not structured. But as soon as we come into the material world, you know, to get to Wisconsin from Utah takes probably 20 hours driving. And so in the same way, our consciousness has to take on this form of grammar. Grammar is the structuring of our consciousness in manifested existence. And so what I'm talking about right now is a root kind of concept of Bhartrihari, of how consciousness is existing in these different states and how it relates to language. So I personally consider him one of the founding fathers of psycholinguistics. Now, if you ask Western psychologists if he's the founding father, most of them have never heard of him.
Could you define what that it means exactly?
Like psycholinguistics? How consciousness and psychology works with language. And how, you know, using certain words changes our consciousness, how different states of consciousness changes, you know, the way we speak, the whole interrelationship between language and mind is psycholinguistics. And most take it back to some German European who just happened to be alive during the Renaissance when the Germans were translating all the Sanskrit texts into German. And for some reason, after that happened, there was this big psychological revolution that happened in Germany. And Bhartrihari is one of the unacknowledged inspirers of that. And we can be pretty sure of that because certain concepts that these German guys were saying are directly lifted from Bhartrihari. And some of these German guys, and the one that I always kick particular is a guy named Saussure. And Saussure was a Greek and Sanskrit teacher. And he translated, he was also a philosopher. And if we look at his philosophy, it's, you know, 60% of it's Bhartrihari. But he nowhere acknowledges some colored person in a backwards culture that doesn't understand the regalness of European civilization. But this started the revolution of psychology in the West. But any which way, so Bhartrihari, super, super important guy. And he's somebody who he talked about time, he talked about consciousness, he talked about language, and you could say from a yogic perspective, but it's not that he was particularly going into yoga, it's just that the basic fundamental principles of yoga and what he was talking about are the same, if that makes sense. All right. Time. Where are we going with this time, huh? Time. So you guys know this is one of my favorite topics, right? No.
I sensed some passion in the video when we were talking about it. But I could feel it too. It was really interesting.
So in the ancient days there was there's different darshanas. And darshanas mean viewpoints. And we talk about those darshanas in chapter 2 of volume 1. And we talk about the Shad Darshana, the 6 official darshanas. But there's hundreds of darshanas. Darshanas meaning different viewpoints. We in the Ayurvedic texts, we find a discussion of those darshanas. And I'll bring that up real fast. This was what's Jacob Griscom's online thing, Frank?
Everyday Ayurveda.
Everyday Ayurveda, yeah. So I wrote it for Everyday Ayurveda. And I called it the middle view. Though middle view is wrong. But, and I'm just going to read this because this will give a concept of darshanas. But it says, and this is Charaka Samhita chapter 25 of Sutrasthana, called The Explanation of the Origin of Man. And notice, it's talking about the origin of man. And, you know, we just had a creation chapter, right? So, so, let's see, I'll explain why this matters after. We'll read it. You guys can, if you want to, you can pull it up. There is an old story, and this is the translation. There's an old story about the venerable Punarvasu, who could clearly see the nature of things. He was in an assembly discussing the origin of human beings and their diseases. Within the gathering, Vamaka, the king of Kashi, meaning the king of Varanasi, who was good with words, had approached the assembly of sages and asked respectfully, "Does disease originate from the same source as man?" So basically, you know, it's like he's asking, is disease coming from this, you know, did the same, and if we wanted to throw it into a deistic way, did the same God that created man also create disease? Or is like, man comes and then there's disease here that gets him after he's been created. So, you know, it's that dichotomy of like, did it come from the same source? The venerable Punarvasu spoke to the sages and said, "You all have," and so this is, there's an assembly happening of all the sages around Punarvasu. And the king asked this question. And Punarvasu said to everyone, "You all have immense knowledge and are confident in your understanding. You are capable of removing the doubts of the king of Kashi." And so they each answer. But what we get from each of their answers is all these different darshanas. And Pariksha, and I translate it as Pariksha, the thinker. And it doesn't say the thinker. Pariksha means the thinker. You know, it's kind of a funny way I'm translating it, but just to say, like, his name means the thinker. And the thinker who thought deeply about this, it's kind of funny, you know, Pariksha who thought deeply. You know, because his name means the thinker. The thinker thought deeply. The human being is, and he says, the human being is generated from the soul. And disease is born of the soul because it is the root cause. So he says that both humans are being manifested from soul and disease is also coming from soul, which enjoys actions and their consequences and collects them. Because the soul is, you know, enjoying the happenings, it's also suffering the consequences. Happiness and suffering cannot arise without this element of consciousness. So happiness and suffering can't arise without the soul. So he says the soul's the cause of man and disease, right? So we get this one darshana of it's called the Atma Vidaya. So it's the belief that the soul is the creator of everything, that it all goes back to the soul. Let's see, Saraloma with spiked hair, and it doesn't say with spiked hair, but Saraloma means spiked hair, okay? So, but I like to play with it. Saraloma disagreed, believing that the nature of the soul is averse to pain and suffering and couldn't be responsible for bringing this about. He's like the soul doesn't want to suffer. It can't be the soul's fault for suffering. It is the mind, known as sattva, and it's not sattva, rajas, and tamas. It's in, sattva here is an ancient name of manas. So it's this mind which becomes seized by rajas and tamas and causes the body in its defect. So he says it's all in the mind. So he's coming from the viewpoint that it's all in the mind. So the one guy says it's all about the soul. The other guy says, nah, the soul would never want it to make you suffer. It's all in the mind. All right. Are you guys following along? Did you find it online?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, I haven't found it. No.
Well, just because visually it makes, you know, it can be, you don't need to, but visually. So next we have Varyovidya, the leech teacher. Just because that's what it is. Varya means leech, Vidya means knower of. So he's the knower of leeches. He disagreed, saying, mind alone cannot be the cause, since without the body, there is no bodily disease or place for the mind to abide. He says, you know, it's the disease, it can't be coming from the mind, because without the body, there is no place for the mind to be. So, so he says, hence, living beings are the product of digestion, the rasa. Just as water makes various things strong, or various things filled with sap, digestive nourishment, rasa, is known as the cause of development. So he's saying it's not the soul that makes us sick, that's the source. It's not the mind, it's the digestive process in the physical body. And that rasa, that virya, that life force. Hiranyaksha said the spiritual level of the soul cannot be a product of digestion. So he's right there saying that, you know, how can digestion create the soul? So he's kind of like, the previous guy, he's straight up materialist thing. It's all coming from the body. So one said it's all coming from the soul. The next said it's all in the mind. The next guy said, nah, it's all the body and physiological processes. And then the reply to Hiranyaksha is, how can the soul be a product of the digestion? You know what I mean? Like, you can't digest and then grow a soul. the mind alone cannot, let's see, nor can the mind, which cannot be seen with the senses, yet has sensory disorders. So he's saying that the soul can't be a product of digestion, nor can the senses be a product of digestion. He says the human is made of the five elements and the soul, and disease comes from these six components. The sages of the Samkhya tradition say we are an aggregate of the six elements. So here we have the Samkhya view. So first we had the guy that said it's all about the soul. That's his view. Then we had the guy it's all about the mind. Then we had the materialist, it's the body and processes. Then we had a guy said, nah, let me tell you about Samkhya. Samkhya is awesome, right? Like, it's all about this interaction here. So we had that presented. Then, when he was done speaking, Kosika, and Kosika means the dictionary maker, said, it's not like this. Without a mother and a father, how can one arise from the six elements? A human is born from a human, as a cow from a cow and a horse from a horse. Diseases like diabetes are known to be hereditary. In this way, genetics are the cause. So this is a 4th BC text. He's saying, no. What are you talking about? It's genetics, disease, humans, it's all DNA. I mean, tell me this couldn't happen, like, right here. You go to a little conference and this same conversation could happen today, right? It'd be in slightly different. But when I read this, I'm like, man, this could be at any gathering of conscious people could have this conversation. Then Bhadra Kapya, who is always punctual, that's what his name means, the always punctual one, disagreed and said, the blind don't give birth to the blind. And also, where did the parents initially originate? He's like, how can it be genetics? DNA has to come from somewhere, right? creatures are born from prior actions, and diseases are born from prior actions. Without karma, human beings and disease are not born. So what's he? He's coming from this karmic theory. So we had the soul, we had mind, we had body, materialism. We had, what was next?
Samkhya.
Then the guy said, no, it's genetics. Uh-huh. And now we got karma coming in here. So these are all different darshanas, different views. And the thing is, none of them is right or wrong, because they're all correct depending on what you're working on. You know what I mean? If you're working on genetic disorders and diabetes, then genetics is what it's about. If you're dealing with soul disorders, you know, somebody who's you know, if Maggie stays in Utah too long and walking dogs, her soul is going to say, I'm meant to be doing, you know, working with people, and all I'm doing is walking dogs every day. And eventually the soul just says, and the body goes sick, you know? So there's soul disease. So all these are different. So it's not that one is right or wrong, but these are just different viewpoints. All right. So we had the karma view. And then Bardwaj said, and Bardwaj is a cool rishi. He said, this is not so, as the doer always proceeds in action. So he says, it can't be karma because there has to be a person that does the action. And the person that does the action came before the action, right? Which is a good argument. They're all good arguments, aren't they? Yeah. So without action, there is no apparent results of karma that create a human. And so he says the swabhava, the self-nature, is the cause for the existence of the human and its diseases. Just as the nature of earth, water, and air and fire are hard, fluid, fluctuating, and hot. So this is, it's one that I contemplate this darshana all the time. It's the swabhava vidya. And the swabhava is basically, you know, I mean, I'm an astrologer. Like, what makes me an astrologer? I just love astrology. I love researching. I'm a researcher. And so my whole life is unfolding because of this swabhava, this nature of that I am, right? And this nature is making me do all these things, and it's guiding my life. And just like it's a dog's swabhava to bark when it's hungry and to chase cats and to want to be walked by Maggie, like, it's, you know, it's just its nature. You know, it's Frank is a yogi. It's like, did he choose to be a yogi? Does he choose to go study? Does he choose? No, it's just his self nature is guiding him. So it's this essential nature in us, which is called the Swabhava school. And do I want to go too much in the Swabhava school? So there's a big debate with the Swabhava school of, do you choose? You know, because when you get to this whole concept of free will, I mean, did I choose to be this? It's just my nature. Like, what is making my nature? It's just my nature. And then you get into the situation where if somebody's a criminal, like, that's just their nature. And so it brings up all kinds of deep philosophical questions, the swabhava darshana. But he says, just as earth is hard, like, it's not that earth is trying to be something, it's just hard. That's what earth is, right? You know, it's... all right. Kankaya said, it's not like this, because the initial results would already exist. It's like, well, where's that original nature coming from? He's like, that original essence is coming from somewhere. Success and failure would be from self-nature, not caused by one's actions. He concluded that the will of the Lord of Creatures, Prajapati, created the sentient and insentient, as well as happiness and suffering. So he's basically saying that Creator God, it's all him. The Creator God created man, and he's also created disease and suffering. So he's blaming it on God. But they're all blaming it on something. But you can see there's people that, like, blame it on God, right? But then the monastic Atreya, and so basically it's, you know, and the monastic is answering. And so it's not just a materialist that's answering. It's this guy who's deeply spiritual. He's replying to the guy that said it's all God. Just to put all this in perspective, what's happening. And so the monastic Atreya said, no, the Lord of Creatures is always favorable to creation and doesn't make them suffer like an unkind person. So he's saying the Creator God is a nice guy. He wouldn't make that happen. A human being and their disease is born from time. As the whole world is controlled by time, and it is time who causes everything.
I've seen that coming.
you like that one?
So here we see the darshana of Kala, the Kala Vidya, you know, the philosophy or the view of time. I'm going to read it again. The human being and their diseases is born from time, as the whole world is controlled by time. The whole world is controlled by time. That means we're all born from time, and it is time who causes everything. So notice, though, I mean, we're getting progressive. You know, soul, body, digestion, elements, self-nature. Then one guy says God, and God is refuted, and time is put up as a higher principle. Very key reality to pick up here. Time is considered superior to God, to Creator God. all right, and then the sage Punarvasu, and Punarvasu was the original guy. He's the sage of like that knows everything in this text, and so he had his students there, and just like I said, so what do you think? So basically, he said to the sages that were there, what do you think? And they all gave their answer. And so after they gave their answer, Punarvasu, he heard them debating in this way, and he said, it's difficult to see that which is. Oh, and I wish I had the Sanskrit to that right there. I should put it in parentheses. It is difficult to see that which is. It must be the tattva, you know, the thatness. If you are dwelling on just one aspect. So here he's sitting there saying, you know, if you're just looking at one thing, you miss the big picture. You know, all of those are important concepts to understand. You know, if you're looking at, you know, somebody's soul passion being quenched, then yes, the soul is the cause of disease. If you're looking at somebody eating McDonald's food, yes, the digestion is the cause of disease. If you're, you know what I mean? If you're in this way,
if you're alive long enough, time will come and cause some kind of disease.
If you're alive long enough, there'll be disease. It is difficult to see that which is if you are dwelling on just one aspect. So he's like sitting there saying, you know, don't just dwell on one darshana. Those who speak their opinions while refuting the views of others as if their modality is the end will just go round and round as the turning of an oil press. And I got a little oil press right there. And the concept, the old oil press, they had a big rock on the bottom, and then they had a round rock on top, and they hooked it to a... they had a pole in the middle, and they hooked it to a cow. And the cow just walked. And it walked, and they put the sesame seeds or whatever they were getting oil from, and it just grinded, and it ground the oil out, and the oil went into the hole in the middle. But so it's just going round and round, and the cow that does it all day long. So so if you don't understand that image, it makes it not as good. But those who speak their opinions while refuting the views of the others, as if their modality is the end, will go round and round as the turning of an oil press. So he's like, you know, if you try and say yours is best, we can keep correcting and saying, oh no, but this, you know, we can keep finding fault with every view and putting another view on top. He said, be free of these arguments and come to the inner nature of oneself. Remove the blind spot, remove the tamas of your modality to advance in learning this knowledge. So he's saying, don't get stuck in one view. The factors which in a wholesome state produce a human being, when in an unwholesome state create various disorders. So, to me, I love this. This is one of my just favorite, you know, Charaka Samhita verses. And I bring this up as we go in here because we, in this chapter, we're learning the darshana of time. And it's not, we don't have to believe that this is the right and only way. But what we want to do is understand, you know, like if we were understanding why the soul not getting fulfilled is causing disease, we would want to understand what the soul is, how it works, how it enervates, you know, how it brings the life force into the body, how the life force gets blocked. We want to understand how that all that works so that we can be somebody that heals soul disease. If we're working with as a psychologist on the mental level, we want to understand the rajas and the tamas and how that's imbalancing the mind so that we can cure somebody's mind. And it's not that that's the only way, the right way, the, you know what I mean? We don't be fundamentalist. But we have to fully understand that viewpoint to be able to heal that particular aspect. So in that same way, we're going into this, the time is the cause of everything. The whole world is controlled by time. A human being and their disease is born from time. We're going there. We're going into that darshana to fully understand that darshana, because in the realm of Jyotish, this is the darshana. This is the view. And it's not right, it's not wrong, it's not superior, it's not inferior. But it's the viewpoint, it's the realm that we look at in order to properly process and understand all this other information. Cool? And then let's take into account what he says right here. So he says they're all just viewpoints, right? Don't argue about which is better, or else we'll have a whole world filled with war and terrorists. And he says, the verse 29. It says the factors which in a wholesome state produce a human being, when in an unwholesome state, create various disorders. I'll say it one more time. No, let's talk about it. So the factors. So we looked in the previous chapter. We saw that there's the three states of consciousness. There's the shaktis of the gunas. There's how they create the soul, the mind, the ahankara. We have the five senses. We have, you know, and so all this is creating us, and we're perceiving the world through these things, right? So we have this concept of how these factors are creating our reality and how we are that reality that's being created, right? Now, when those factors, all those components are, the factors which in a wholesome state, so when those factors are all working, they produce a human being. And when in unwholesome, and when they become unwholesome in an unwholesome state, when one of those factors isn't working, or becomes too much, too little, or out of whack, those are the three states: too much, too little, or out of whack. Which is basically Rajas, Tamas, and Rahu. You know, that creates the various disorders. So disorder is those components that we learned about out of whack. And health is when all those are functioning in a healthy way. But we're going to go into time. So for him, he said, let's look at the core. Let's look at the core essence in all these things. So what I just said right now is we could take that into... if we take that into a chart, you know, the factors that make you who you are, Lagna, Sun and Moon, and the other Bhavas, if they're working in a wholesome way, you know, everything's in a good house, not in a Jushtana, not debilitated or cursed, then there's health. If any of those things are becoming unwholesome, Lagna Lord gone to the sixth with Saturn in the first, then we've created an unwholesome situation, right? And that unwholesomeness is creating disease. If we go to the Swabhava school, the Swabhava is our essence. So what's your essence? What's the essence of who you're supposed to be in this world, huh?
It's a good question.
So Frank is a yogi, educator, consciousness explorer, right? Now, if Frank... whatever, something happened and he had to get a job mopping, being a janitor in a school, his self nature would not be happening. He would not be doing what he's supposed to be doing, and all of a sudden his work would be unwholesome to his swap off. T Teaching, he's working with consciousness. Teaching yoga, he's working with consciousness. Yeah, so all the, there's a certain areas where he's working with consciousness, and then there's the realms where he's not, and his swabhava can't come out. So that unwholesomeness is creating disease, and the wholesome application of his self nature is bringing health. We take it to
can't part of our self nature be to do things that aren't part of our self nature? I mean, or is that more just like a
But that's the unwholesome. That's the unwholesomeness.
I forgot the other chair.
Yeah. Well, what's up with that one?
I like to sit with my knees like that. It's just comfortable.
Okay.
And my left knee's been bothering me.
Go for it. So if we take it to the guy that said nourishment, you know, with the nourishment, good food, wholesome food, which has all the nutrients you need, makes you healthy. And the bad food makes it so this, the components that make you who you are in each of these schools of philosophy is also what causes sickness in each of these schools of philosophy when unwholesome. Do you get the beauty of what he just said? He just took all the different darshanas and he said, listen, don't get stuck in your individual view. Look at the essence. When your view and all its components are working right, there's health, and it's making a human being. And when your view and its components aren't working harmoniously, there's disease and disorder. So he kind of got to the heart of all of them.
Dharma, kind of, in a way, I mean, like...
Not dharma. The factors that make up who the human being is, in whatever the modality is, when they're wholesome, there's health. When those same factors are unwholesome, not coming together, becoming either deficient, excess, or out of whack, then there's illness. But it's the factors within that school that make the human being that, when out of whack, create the problem. So do you see that his statement can be applied to all the schools and all the views?
Yeah.
All right. And for Jyotish, we have to understand the path of time. Kala Advan. All right. Any comments on that?
No,
you think he's wrong?
No, man.
You think he's wrong? Disagree?
I mean, like, if one is being their true nature,
yeah.
What else could you ask? That seems in harmony. So of course, when I feel like if someone is, you know, doing their svabhava, as you say, you know, there's an inherent harmony in that. So I can kind of agree.
And think about this. What if you were born in Saudi Arabia as a highly sexual gay man? Could your svabhava be expressed?
No.
Now, if you're born in California, or just in America in general, and in your heart, you're svabhava, you're a monk. You're a monk who's supposed to be running a monastery. You can't do... There's what monastery to run in America?
Yeah. And how do you even align with a goal like that when you're surrounded
you're
by...
You're svabhava, right?
Yeah.
And I had a guy like that not that long ago. His chart, he was the head of a monk. He was the head of the monastery. And he lived in California and had to think about his retirement. And I felt so bad for him because it was just so out of line with, like, you know, his self-nature. All right. That was a fun way to start, right? So let's see. Kalana. Let's see, before we do Kalana, the first paragraph is Kalana. Because Kalana is the most important thing. And what's the most important thing?
Kalana.
Kalana. What's Kalana mean?
Path of time.
Kalana. We'll get to what Kalana means in a minute. Parashara calls the zodiac the Kala Purusha. He calls it the anthropomorphic body of time. So when we look at the chart, we're looking at time. We're looking at a picture of time. We're looking at the moment somebody was born in time. So time is generating. When you're predicting when somebody gets married or when they're going to have a health problem or all this stuff, it's the time that's giving you that information. The time is. The chart is the time that they were born. Like, that's the most important. It's the time. It's this cosmic clock that's generating everything. So you see, for the Jyotishi, this Kala Darshana becomes very important, right? It's the Kala Purusha. So, Kalana. Oy, oy, oy.
Based on that concept.
Yeah.
Because, so basically, you were saying before too, time is creating space. And so, within calculations, then, like, I've been seeing some arguments put forth from, like, Narasimha and this and that, where, he's using tropical to do time calculations now for, like, dates and calendars, and then, space calculations. And so, there he's splitting it up. So, but can we really, based on these definitions, ideas, would it say that's impossible to do?
Send me a link to where he's doing that, because that's what I'm doing.
Really?
Yeah. Did he read my article, or did he come to the same conclusion, separately? You got me curious now. For calendrical.
Oh yeah, I've read your articles on the calendars and all that.
Yeah. So for calendrical, I'm much more a fan of the tropical concept. What happened?
But he's using it to calculate Vimshottari Dasha, and then he's using different calculations to draw up a chart, for example. So
the wonderful thing about Narasimha is he'll take a concept, he'll dive deep into it, and he'll research it way more than the average person could ever hope to. And it might take a year or three, but he comes out on the other end and he either keeps it or throws it away. So if he's beginning to do something new, I would just take it with a grain of salt. If it's something that is a long-term, like, stability, then, what's up?
He says he's 100% sure on this one thing. He's not sure about anything else, but this one, he's 100%. So I was like, that's a pretty strong statement. I couldn't say that about almost anything.
I want to read that. I haven't read that. Yeah. But so time is creating space. And so space is also read along with time, but it's just what do we see as primary? Just like, even if we talked about the guy who was looking at the mind, the guy looking at the mind is still looking at the food. He's just seeing how the food is affecting your mind with rajas and tamas, instead of looking at it as vata and pitta, like the digestion guy is. So everything is always playing in. It's just, what are we considering the mover, the causer, the karana? So kalana. Does anybody here know what kalana is? Frank? Kalana?
No, it's the force that impels events forward.
Kalana. Yeah. That's what it is. So you know, and Kulina, I would say, and I get to talk. Maggie's a psychologist background, so I get to bring in my psychology love with her. But I would say Kulina most relates to developmental psychology. In that, you know, we're born as a baby, and every baby becomes a toddler at the same time. And every toddler becomes a child at the same approximate time. And everybody, and we say everybody, you know, there's always the weird, unwholesome situations, but everybody hits puberty about the same time. Everybody starts to get gray hair and you know, like, it's just everybody gets old. So there's this thing, like, you know, the recent geneticists, they want to, like, find out where in our DNA is this thing and how can we stop it from happening. But the thing is, it just happens. If you look at a plant, you plant a seed and it sprouts and it grows and it goes through its life cycle. You harvest and the plant dies and then you start a new plant. Like, so it's just growing. And everything is growing and developing. Why? What is it that's making everything grow and develop? What is making the tree have fruit? Now, the Swabhava guy would say, a tree has fruit because that's its nature to fruit. You know? But from the Jyotish perspective, there's this force impelling it. It's impelling it to move forward into these different states. There's something that's making us, our life unfold. And that force, we see it in with the sun and the moon. You know, the sun rises every day. The moon is going through its lunations every month. The years, we're going constantly around the sun. So the Kulina is everywhere. And the first, the primary place, you know, we look up in the sky and it's right there. Everything is being impelled. And that impelling, this motion, this, like, why are the planets spinning? Every single planet is spinning. They're all spinning at the different times and rotations, but they're all spinning. And they're all circling or spinning through the galaxy. Nothing is just like randomly floating around. It's all like on these big orbits, right? It's all spinning. It's all in these cycles. And everything is developing. So this force that's moving us forward is called Kulina. We are... And if we could translate it into English, if we took time and made time a verb, and you see, if I say timing, then you think I'm sitting here like counting how long something lasts. So it doesn't kind of work. But like, how can we turn time into a verb?
Timage.
But the na on the kala is an ing. So it's literally time. It's like, you know, for me to grow old, I'm timing. For you to put a seed in the ground and that plant to grow, the plant's timing. And at the right timing, the fruit's coming. It's timing. You can sit there and you know, when you start the light cycle, like, there's a certain amount of time and then there's a harvest. Right? It's an exact, like, it's you're timing it. You're making it so that its time comes. That's Kulina. So the manifest world is created and it exists within time. Time is the force impelling events forward, measured by change. So, and the planets, they're just impelling. So it's this force. It's this force moving forward. Can you stop? Can you make it? Can we make anything so that it doesn't change? What can we make not change?
Well, we should be able to stop our brain.
But you can't stop your chain. You can't, though.
Yeah.
Right? Your brain is changing.
Short periods of time.
Let me see you. How short?
practicing meditation lately.
But you see what I mean? There's nothing we can't stop anything. There's nothing we can stop. And so this chapter, the beginning of this chapter, it's all getting a relationship to that. Because that force is moving us. It's moving everything. And what are we? We say, oh, this incredible force that's moving everything. Let me take on a form so that I can see you. And then we type in Jehora and we say, new chart. And there it is. Okay? This force that's moving everything, it just took on a form for us. All right. So I'm super esoteric right now, and the beginning of this book, you know, there's a handful of esoteric things, but this is getting us into this core essence, so that the astrology is, we're not coming from a superficial place. We're coming from, we look at this chart, and this chart is that which is impelling everything to exist. You know, I look at that chart this moment, this chart, all the Vargas, is the body of the impelling energy right now. And so what's going to be manifesting? What's going to be coming? A child born with this impelling energy is impelled into what this is indicating. All right. And any thoughts or questions or comments on that? It's a yummy concept, huh?
Something to sit with.
All right. And this is the Vedic understanding. This is the Vedic perspective. And this is not me making this up. This is the teaching that's given. And it's given in multiple places. And even since I wrote this chapter, I've found two or three more references in different texts in different areas. Even that Charaka Samhita translation, that I found after this text. So after this was written. So I didn't put it in there. But like, you know, it's just, you can just see it everywhere throughout the Vedic literature, this concept of Kalana. Alright. So we see the concept in the Vedas, and here I talk about Ritu and all what that means. Let's see. I don't know what I talked about in the recording or not in the recording, but Ritu. Ritu means, Ritu comes from Ritta. And Ritta is just the natural way. It's the way things are. It's how they're happening. And a season is just this natural thing that's happening. It's the natural cycle. You know, it's supposed to be winter. Winter is the natural way. If all of a sudden winter isn't winter anymore, we've entered anaritta, we've entered chaos and disorder. Which we're getting pretty close to that, huh?
Every day.
Ritta, the main symbol that is utilized for this ritta and the seasons is the sun. So the sun is this indicator, this concept of this natural way. And I give a handful of references. You guys can all listen to that in the recording. Let's see. Here is a little section from 164 of the Rig Veda. Let's see. Do we want to read that? We read that a little bit at some point. We read part of that, right? In level one with you guys. The Asya Vamasya. So this is coming from the Rig Veda. And so the Rig Veda talks about time as a wheel. as this 12-spoked wheel. And now, Frawley gives this lecture on why Vedic astrology is Vedic. And he says, see, they got a wheel with 12 spokes. That means they were doing Jyotish. which to me, I think it's the wrong reason to, that's not the reason it's Vedic astrology. But here we see this concept of time with 12 spokes. And so those 12 spokes, they could be 12 signs, they could also be 12 months. They could also be 12 seasons. You know, there's different ways to interpret it. And there's nothing that tells us those are signs versus months. But any which way, there's this 12-spoked wheel. And it's spinning. And that's time. Time is this circle that's spinning. So there's this concept of cycles and revolutions. Cycles and cycles and cycles and cycles within cycles and spinning. But, you know, if you think about the axle of a wheel, the axle just stays still. And the wheel's moving around it, right? And you know, the Vedic people, they had chariots. So they had a pretty stable axle, and the horse was pulling them, and then the wheel was just turning on them. And so for them, heaven, or that which is beyond the world, is that space that doesn't change. That time created the world. And when we get to that which is the source of everything, we've gone beyond time. It's the eternal. And that eternal is, you see, if you are born, then that means you're going to die. If you're not born, if you're unborn, then you're undying. If you're manifest, then that manifestation is going to eventually demanifest. So that which is beyond manifestation is the eternal, the immortal, the amrita. That's the original nature of the amrita. It's that energy of the that which doesn't change, the that which is beyond time, that place that exists within all of us that is beyond. But as soon as time comes in, it creates everything. Because there's constant change. Oh, yeah. All right. So we got this concept of the axle. Let's see. Time works like a wheel that spins in cycles, moving forward around in an unchanging axle. Everything ages, deteriorates, and goes away. But the axle of time continues, unchanging, undecaying, ajara. This is basically the modern saying that everything changes except change itself. Let's see. The sun ripens everything on earth by means of days, nights, half months, months, and seasons. So the Vedas, they're going into this concept of things are being ripened by the months, by the days, by the years, the days, the weeks. You know, when you look like how long are you going to be working in your work, you're looking how many weeks till I finish this. It's all that how long it takes to be ripe. It's the weeks, the days, they're ripening it. It's that kalana, that time. All right. So now I had wanted to read, because I want to fully ground us in this Vedic concept here. I have the Kala Sutta here. Let's see. Do you want to read? I want to read this one. And you can read this one. All right. Justin is going to read Joshi's translation. I'm going to read... Davy Chun's translation. So I'll read verse one, you read verse one. I'll read verse two, you read verse two.
Okay.
Actually,
where are we starting?
Kala Sutta.
Got it.
And Kala Sutta is Sutta 19 is 1950. Let's see, where is it? 1953, section book 19, hymn 53. Just as a fast horse with seven roped reins carries a chariot. So just as a fast horse with seven roped reins. So he's talking about one horse with seven reins. Carries a chariot. Similarly, the all-stirring, the omnipresent, the omniscient. I mean, the all-potent. So it's right here, the omnipresent, the omniscient, the omnipotent. Those are the three key things, right? The three key powers. Who is possessed of a thousandfold powers. So it's this like a chariot being pulled by seven reins, by a fast horse with seven reins. It's omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, and it's a thousand powers more than that. Even though we don't even know what those powers are, it's a thousand powers more than that. A vigilance, indestructible and almighty, carries this universe under his sway. The seers, possessing all kinds of knowledge and powers of action, reach up to him. All the worlds are sheer wheels of his machine of creation. So this is a prayer to time. I'll read that last little. The seers, possessing all kinds of knowledge, they reach up to him. All the worlds are sheer wheels. So this concept of the wheel, everything is spinning, everything is orbiting, everything is going through cycles of his machine of creation, of time's machine of creation. So time's that Kalina, everything is in the wheels of Kalina, right? Okay, let's see this translation.
Okay. Time drives a horse with seven reins. Thousand-eyed, unaging, possessing much seed. Him the inspired poets mount. His wheels are all beings.
His wheels are all beings. Oh. Let's see. The Kala, the time, carries along seven wheels. Seven are its navels, and immortal is its axle. We talked about that immortal axle. The self-same time, revealing all these worlds, is truly known to the primeval lord.
Seven wheels do this time drive. Seven are his knaves. Immortality forsooth his axle. He, time, including all these beings, goes on as first god.
So it's calling him the first god. It's calling him the Pratamesh. It's he is the original first god. That time, you know, there's Purush and Prakriti in time. So here, because this sukta is coming from the Kala Darshana, it's saying there was nothingness and then time pulled out from nothing something. Time made everything, time made change, and from nothing things came, and that was time that made that happen. So this is the Kala Darshana. The whole of this universe is stationed in the omnipresent and the omnipotent God. The omnipresent, meaning time is everywhere, and time is all powerful, right? We, the good ones of the earth, see him in various ways. He brings to light all these worlds. So it's connecting it to the sun. He brings to light all these worlds. Him they call time, Kala, pervading through all the vast sky.
A full vessel is set upon time. We indeed see it being now manifoldly. It is in front of all these beings. It call they time in the highest firmament.
He alone pervades all the spheres. He also thoroughly surrounds them all. Being Father, the Creator, becomes their Son. So the Creator becomes his Son, the Protector. No other energy is greater than he.
He indeed together brought beings. He indeed together went about beings. Being Father, he became Son of them. Than him verily there is no other brilliancy that is higher.
The Kala, the time, created these heavenly spheres. Kala, time, also made these terrestrial spheres. In the Kala, in time, is verily stationed in various forms all what was created before and all what shall be created in the future and all that is moving on.
Time generated yonder sky, time also these earths. What is and what is to be stands out, sent forth by time.
It's awesome, isn't it? Mm-hmm. time produced the very existence of the creation and the wealth thereof. The sun shines in time. Verily, in time, all alone, all the creatures find their existence. The organs, like the eyes, have their powers of perception due to him.
Time created the earth. In time burns the sun. In time are all existences. In time the eye looks abroad.
Okay, so we're going to go deep into this verse for a minute before we go to the next few verses. So here, time produced the very existence and the creation and the wealth thereof. So time is producing everything, right? The sun shines in time. So we're getting this relationship where the sun is a symbol of time because it's turning. Now, if we look at the Rashis are the Adityas. They're the different forms of time. They're the sun in the different months of the year. So the Rashis are this sun. And here it says that the time produced the very existence of the creation and the wealth thereof. So we look at the signs as what are the resources? What's coming from this area? We look at the Rashi Drishti as the resources in a certain area. So it's that solar energy. It's what is time going to bring here? What is time giving us? Verily, in time alone, all creatures find their existence. The organs, like the eyes, have their powers. So here, it's not only talking about the sun, but it's talking about the eyes have the power to see. Now, this has a double meaning. One, the sun is the Agni Tattva, and Agni is connected to the eyes and the power of seeing, right? We're Jyotishis. What aspect of the Vedas is Jyotish?
I think you're trying to say elemental wise, it relates to fire and sight.
But organ, what organ is sight? The Jyotish is called the eye of the Vedas. So there's this, you see the connection here. Right in this Kala Sukta, there's a connection to the sun. What's the primary planet? What's the most important planet? Is the sun. If there wasn't the sun, there'd be no other planets. There'd be nothing else spinning. You know? Mm-hmm. So everything is revolving around the sun. So it's the core. And in Jyotish, the sun is what gives us the power to see on an external level. It's giving us the power. It's making the eye so that we process what we see. It's giving us light to be able to perceive. But from a Jyotish perspective, the sun is the power of seeing what's happening in a chart. And so when we look at this chart, and I mean, like right now when I look at I do the chart for now, and it's Leo rising with Rahu in it. So what does that mean? How do I see and interpret what that means? It's the power of the sun that gives me the ability to interpret that, to see what that means, to consciously apprehend what that means. And then there's an even deeper level where the sun is related to the perceiver. So the sun is even allowing there to be something that receives the perception of the senses. But any which way. So the sun and the power of the eye of the Vedas, and the powers to see. Number 7. Let's see, I have my own translation on top here. Mind, breath, and name all exist in time. Verily in time, all are well placed. The mind, the vital breath, the prana, and the name, the nama. All these subjects enjoy themselves at his very approach.
In time is mind, in time is breath, in time is name collected. By time, when arrived, all these creatures are glad.
All right, so there's another little hidden thing in here that make sure I don't miss it when we talk about some of the other stuff in here. But here it's talking about mind, manas, prana, and nama. And manas is the mind, prana is the breath, and nama is how we're perceiving. It's the name. It's our perceptual abilities. And this is, we see this in later tantric texts, this trinity. And this trinity is motivated by time. And in, there's a lecture, I think it's going to be in Sapta Rishis. I think I just gave a lecture for Sapta Rishis. I can't remember. It should be online sometime soon. I'm not producing it. So, but there I talk about the trinity of time, mind, and breath. And so here we can see it's Atharvic Vedic roots in this verse. Okay, number 8. And we'll talk a little bit about this that deeper too. 8. In the self-same time are fully established the austerity, the grandeur, the vast universe, and the Vedic lore. He is the Lord of all. He is the father or protector of the king or the son. What's that verse say? That sounds like a bad translation.
In time is fervor. In time is what is chief. In time is the Brahman collected. Time is the Lord of all, who is father of Prajapati.
Time is the Lord of all, who's the father of the creator God. So right here we got that he's the father of the creator God. And remember in Charaka, mm-hmm. after he said, oh no, this is all from Prajapati. And the response to that was, oh no, Prajapati, he's nice. It's time that's creating the issues. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like his superior, the creator God superior is the, yeah. 10. The Kala created all creatures. In the beginning, he created the Hiranyagarbha, the source of all creation. And that Hiranyagarbha. So Hiranyagarbha is a Vedic term for what are the essential elements that make the universe, of which the universe can then grow from. And so in chapter 1, when we looked at the factors of the three states of consciousness, the three gunas, the soul, mind, and ahankara, the five elements, all that was created inside this golden egg, or this golden embryo. And from that, once that all mixed, then the world grew from that. So here it's saying, in the beginning, he created the Hiranyagarbha. So time is creating these factors that are making the world. The source and that all those factors, they're the source of all creation. The self-existent, the self-effulgent, and the heating energy was simply his own self revealed to us.
Sent by it, born by it, in it, is this tat set firm time becoming the Brahman bears the most exalted one.
All right. So that's the Kala Sutta.
I still have one more.
Really?
Yeah, I think I'll just read it. Time generated progeny, time in the beginning, Prajapati. Self-existent Kasyapa from time, fervor from time was born.
All right. But so do you see how all these like concepts that we talked about, they're existing in these earliest Vedic texts? Ah. All right. And then we go into the Pancharatras, Agamas, and Puranas. And I talk about that in the recording, so I don't think we need to go too into the beginning part of this. In the Upanishads, there's a differentiation made between transcendental time and gross time. Gross time is called the time with parts, and the other is the non-time, or akala, without parts. That which is prior to the sun is the timeless, a color, without parts. And so later in the tantras, instead of becoming kala and akala, it becomes krama and akrama. And I think we talked a little bit about this last week, krama and akrama, did we? Or was that some other class I was talking about, krama and akrama?
I remember the term.
I remember krama at some point. Maybe, I don't know if it was in the lectures or not.
The difference between how time manifests in the material world versus in the dream world.
Oh yeah.
The orderliness versus the unorderliness. So here, that's what it's talking about. And the different, and how time is manifesting differently on the different levels. You know, there's time in the physical realm, there's time in the dream realm, and there's time in the soul realm. And all those are different. There's a different nature. It's a whole different time. To me, I personally, my own little opinion is, we have Newtonian physics, we have nuclear physics, and then we have quantum physics. What's the, there's something in between. It's not nuclear physics. It's right. Article. It was you that we were talking about this with. Right?
Was it?
Come on, dude.
Particle physics.
I don't. But you know, there's three types of physics. Was it this class, Frank, that I was talking about that, or was it another class?
Hear him. He's talking.
Frank, we can't hear you.
Oops. Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about that a little. I had to ask what the middle stage might be compared to with physics, but.
Okay,
we weren't totally sure, but yeah, we got into it then.
Yeah. So that's where that's coming from. Bottom paragraph here. Time urges forth the entire creation in an orderly manner. From the four aspects of the Supreme, the great Tattva Mahat, cosmic intelligence, manifests three parts. Buddhi, prana, and kala. So here we have the time, the breath, and consciousness. Here, buddhi is referring to all states of consciousness. And prana, and time. And in the Saptarishi thing that's coming out soon, it's all about the relationship between those three. But we have this basic concept that time is change, right? And so as time moves, we breathe. Time just happened. And as time just happened, we breathed. And as we breathe, thoughts changed in our consciousness. Each breath, as the breath moves, the thoughts and what thoughts are arising are changing. So there's this trinity here of time, the prana, and the thoughts, the consciousness. So let's see, I want to ground this better. And I'm going to ground it in the abstract first, and then we'll pull it into how it applies to charts. So Nirvikalpa Samadhi, Frank, how fast are you breathing?
None.
So Nirvikalpa Samadhi is when the mind stops, when you have no thoughts. And when you have no thoughts, there's no breathing. So we know when a yogi has entered Nirvikalpa Samadhi because they're sitting there and there's not a single breath happening. They completely stop their heartbeat and their breathing. And this has been scientifically documented by multiple times, multiple scientists, and still the Western world says, oh, it's some strange anomaly. because it doesn't fit into their science. But for us, it basically is showing that relationship between mind and breath. And so when they enter that state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, they enter the realm beyond time. They've entered that unmanifest consciousness. Now, as time changes, the moon is in a different nakshatra. Different thoughts are arising. Different times of your life, if you're in a time of Saturn, there's going to be a different state of consciousness, which changes how the prana moves in your body. So it's a trinity that we can't separate. Now, let's take it into Vimshottari Dasha. So what's your dasha right now?
Sun.
Sun what?
I believe it's sun moon now.
Sun moon. And this new house, was there a change of dasha that invoked it?
Not really. But, I didn't check. I was too worried about getting the muhurta right and all these other things.
So let's see. What was the time period that the new house came?
Oh, I moved in December 9th, I believe, was the day. Where am I now?
Sun K2. Or no, I'm off. I'm wrong. Your sun moon.
Okay. Yeah.
No, and your sun Mars now. But you moved in December what? You moved in December what?
9th.
Ninth. So I bet you this is a month off.
Why?
Because basically Sun Mars brought you this new house.
So would it be off because of my birth time or something?
Just that big change. Yeah, a few minutes this way or that way. Possibility. Whenever we look at these dashas, it can always go a week or two in one way or another. But let's see. Is the moon is sitting here giving us 10th house work. It is aspecting the house of home. Mars is giving us a Viparita Argala to the 4th house, right? And from there we have a bandhana between Venus. From Mars we have a bandhana between Venus and Saturn. All right. But so as time changed, it made something happen in your life. So time made this thing happen. We predict the things happening in people's lives based upon these changing time cycles. Just shut your eyes for a minute. Somebody came up with this cycle of planets. Wheels within wheels within wheels. And we can overlap that on the chart. And those wheels turning are showing us what's arising in this person's life. As this time turns, it's impelling you to get a house. What kind of incredible tool this is. All right.
I agree.
Yes. So, why does somebody want a house? Why does somebody want to get married at a certain time? Why does somebody not want to get married at one time and then later want to get married? Why is somebody looking for a partner and can't find some, and then another period somebody comes? And I have a friend right now. She's going through a terrible heartbreak. And she wrote me. She said, "You were right." And you know, she met this guy and it was great. It was like this wonderful, juicy relationship. And she'd had such dry relationships. And all of a sudden she found somebody who loved her. And it was just like intimate. And just he was just wonderful. And I looked and she was in a Rahu Antardasha. I said, "Are you sure this is something serious? You know, I mean, he came in a Rahu Antardasha." She said, "Oh, it's serious. This is it. You know, he's going to leave his wife to be with me." And I said, "You sure he's going to leave his wife?" And she said, "Yes, he moved out so-and-so time. He's not going to be with her anymore. He's in love with me." And it was the Rahu Antardasha she met him. I was like, "I don't know, how can she meet that perfect person in a Rahu Antardasha with such a nasty Rahu in her chart?" And of course, later he decided he didn't want to leave his wife. You know? So, she's heartbroken. But so, how could I just tell that by looking at these cycles? You know, what is being impelled? I could see what was coming into her life. I could see he wasn't going to be serious if he came in that kind of dasha. All right. So time. Time is... And so it's impelling what's happening. It's impelling what we're thinking. It's impelling our desires. I don't know if I fully got that booty prana kala there, but...
I'm still processing it. Like, the understanding that it's all... Like, when you were talking about how, yeah, time brought me to get the house, but also, so did my prana, and so did my, you know, my consciousness.
Yes.
It's like there's no separation.
There's no separate... There are trinity.
Things are working towards everything.
Well, the thing is, there's a trinity. If one changes the other. They all are changing always. You can't change one without the other. If the time changes, the prana changes, the Buddha's changing. And who's the root?
Time.
You know? So as the time changes, your thoughts, your desires, what you want, it all changes. And I think we could do more, but I think that's enough to chew on, right? Let that go in, sink in, contemplate that over the week. And so I'm not gonna go deeper into any of that now. We'll just sit with that and sit with. What I want is you know, look at that beginning chapter and contemplate time. Contemplate dashas. Contemplate how in the heck can these dashas work. And I'm not saying, and I'm not sitting here saying I know how they work. Because I know how to read them. But how they work is just this incredible. I mean, who came up with that? You know, that's the other thing about Pingree, Frank. It's like, you know, he talks about this, and even there's this guy, Chris Brennan, who does Greek astrology. And he says, oh, so somebody thinks that they created horoscopic astrology somewhere between 300 and 200 BC. Like somebody would have just created this in a few decades. You know, this is such a deep, profound concept of reality. This is not just something that somebody stumbled across. They're like, oh, if we put the planets in this order, this shows how the whole universe manifests. You know what I mean? It's like, this is this like profound, you know, where did this come from? What depths of reality, like what magic, what, you know? And so when the Vedic people talk about, well, God, you know, the rishis were talking to Brahma and Brahma told me this. It's like, heck, I mean... If you really understand this, it's like it's coming from some deep well, deeper than a human consciousness.
Yes. Or our modern consciousness.
Maybe. Or, you know, it's I mean, what a deep well, what a deep understanding of reality this is. And so the note that we'll end on, instead of going deeper into it, is take the week, contemplate this, kind of stay with these concepts. You know, like if you find your mind thinking about stupid things, just pick up, read a paragraph, and just kind of spend the week meditating on time. That way you...
I liked your thought, because when I read this, you know, I've heard it before, but just hearing you talk about it brings it to life. But
yeah.
When you said, you know, when I was... getting in touch with it, and you know, I was starting to get creeped out, or not creeped out, but you know, there was definitely a presence coming forth, you know, calling forth this concept of time. And then you had a comment in one of the lectures where, you know, when you look at time, it looks back to you. And I was like, that's, you know, I could feel that, you know,
So that's what we're doing right now. We're not just learning Jyotish, but we're actually kind of getting connected to the roots of Jyotish. We're getting connected right now by meditating on time and having this kind of deep soul connection with it. We're having a if you're going to be just like a general psychologist, kind of getting to know your mind. So You want to know your own mind if you're going to be a psychologist. For us to be astrologers, we want to have this relationship to time. We want to feel time. We want to feel this impelling force. And it's a reality. It's real. And I mentioned in here, there's, in the Bhagavad Gita, and we'll talk about, I'll say the story again next week, but at one point, Krishna shows Arjuna says, let me see your true form. And he says, well, if you want to see my full form, you're sure you're, and he showed his full form, and he said, what are you? Arjuna says, he says, aham kalo, I am time. So, we'll dig into that concept next week. But yeah, we just want to spend some time meditating here. Getting so that it's not a foreign concept, but it's something that our consciousness can reside in and that our consciousness can disappear into. Because our consciousness is made of it. And if we can have this relationship with it, then when we start looking at these time cycles, because the second half of this book gets super technical. You know what I mean? We're being, if this is here and that's here, and it gets all these calculations. And it's always a balance between the intuitive and the technical. And so what we're working on here is by this relationship to time, we are plugging in where that intuition is going to come from in this realm of our work. You know, if we were an intuitive who was reading auras, we would be doing some, I don't know, feeling the colors or something, right? and so here, we want to feel into time. We want to, like, what is this force moving everything? Look at your plants and watch them each week. Look at little kids and look at pictures of yourself when you were young. And, like, how'd you get old? You know, like, look at your, just contemplate this impelling force. And in the Saptarishi thing I just did, I talk a little bit about watching time in the tithis and how the thought processes are changing, which is just another way of looking at time. But the big thing is have a meditation on time the next week. And we'll spend probably another week. Next week, we'll do a same kind of vibe as this class. And then we'll start getting into the real technical stuff. And so what we're focusing on here is akala. We're focusing on just the energy of time that's not divided. And after next week, we'll get into the krama. To the sequential, what are the sequences? Minutes, hours, days, tithis, years, degree movement, all these different forms that time gets divided up into that creates these different frequencies of our reality. All right. We good?
I think so.
Well, I'll keep the recorder on. What's your random question?
Well, I just started my what is known in Western astrology as the Saturn return. Saturn just went into, and it's actually like directly over my natal Saturn, or it's pretty close, Gandanta. I'm just wondering, what is that? What do we usually, from a Vedic perspective?
Oh, your Saturn is blessing you right now.
Yeah, from what I've researched, you know, it's Sati that's more focused on in terms of Saturn transit.
No, your Saturn's blessing you. Saturn, you have a Saturn return, and you get to learn about Kal.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have a better Saturn.
Through that.
Okay.
Sounds good. I mean, I'm not worried, you know. I just wanted to know the significations.
Be ready to work your butt off this next few months. That's the significations.
That's
there,
what
okay?
I was kind of hoping for.
Yeah.
I'll listen to the discipline Saturn.
Right. But no questions about the material, yeah?
I've got maybe picky ones, but they're more on the technical end, so we should probably wait till that time.
Technical in which way?
More the later half of the time chapter.
Yeah, when we get there, we'll do it. What's up, Maggie?
Yeah.
Need to go.
Huh?
I need to go move a mattress. Okay.
All right. See you next week.
Bye, everybody.